Hi everyone, welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. My name is Ton Dobbe and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration and the author of The Remarkable Effect. I envision a world where every B2B SaaS startup succeeds because they're creating software that customers would miss if they were gone. And here's why. Research consistently shows that 90% of all startups fail, and that's bad. What's worse, however, is that 75% of SaaS scale-ups fail, companies that are supposed to have product market fit. Far too few scale-ups create the traction they aspire for and fail for the wrong reasons. And I believe this should stop, and hence I created my business. And the goal that I have with this podcast is twofold. First, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. Secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what it requires to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. The guest of a podcast this week is Sunil Patel, CEO of Techmetric.
We use first principles thinking. And what I mean by that is everybody in our space, at least, wants to either copy features from one another. This person has this feature because their sales team said, like, let me just give you some examples. Like, let's just say a competitor sales team is trying to sell against us. And the competitor sales team is going to bring up to their leadership that, hey, they've got these features. We can't win against Techmetric because they have all these features. And what the competitor is typically going to do is try to emulate or copy what we've built, right?
Yeah.
I don't approach development that way. I want to first figure out, what are we trying to solve?
This is Sunil. Before building software, he owned and operated multiple auto repair shops, giving him the rare insider's perspective on the industry's real problems. He's a practical entrepreneur who's obsessed with simplicity and hates wasted effort. When in 2016, 8 years after the iPhones hit the market, shop owners still couldn't leverage that technology to run their business, Sunil simply decided to be the one to change that. And this inspired me, and hence I invited Sunil to my podcast. We explore how breaking industry norms and staying true to first principles creates remarkable companies. Sunil shares hard truth about why they turned down big clients, cut all marketing spend to zero, and raised the least funding in the industry, yet still became the market leader and the only profitable one. And you'll discover the counterintuitive decision that shocked his competitors but doubled customer loyalty overnight. By listening to this podcast, you will learn four things. Firstly, why maintaining the right departmental hierarchy prevents overselling and product gaps. Secondly, what approach led Sunil to solve the one click that competitors needed 60 to 80 clicks for? Thirdly, why saying no to customers with big wallets and long wish lists makes you more money? And lastly, why hiring the right people trumps everything else in scaling a business. Well, hi, Sunil. Thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on the podcast.
Thank you, Ton. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, pleasure. Mainly also because it brings so many memories back about what I used to do before myself.
Okay.
Running product strategy and product management at an ERP company called Unit 4. So I got so many questions around like your choices, particularly also the verticalization choices. It's going to be fun. But before we start talking about the company, what drives you? What gives you energy as an entrepreneur?
Constant change in the space is a good way to put it. Disrupting a market that is super ripe for innovation and unseating the incumbents that have been in this space for decades with no change and essentially affecting all of our users, right? All of our, if I consider like our shop owners, the repair shop owners that use our product, they have been given a product that hasn't changed for decades and we wanted to disrupt it.
Interesting how you use these words in that order also. So what does disruption mean for you? Because I mean, it's of course, it can have a very positive, but also a pretty negative connotation.
So for our direct customers, I view that as a positive change for them because we're providing a solution that essentially changes the way they operate the repair shops, gives them time back, potentially also generates them more revenue in their business. They're able to see what's happening in their repair shop remotely. We even have stories where you have a husband and a wife running a repair shop, and the wife takes all of the invoices home and loads up our software, Techmetric, and is able to operate from home with the kids. And then during COVID, this was a fantastic thing to be using Techmetric during those times. So now for the competitors, it is going to be very disruptive in a negative way, obviously. Yeah. And ultimately, not that I mean to harm anybody or hurt anyone, but ultimately, like, it's time for change. This industry has to change. There is a better way of doing these things.
Exactly. Well said. Yeah, that's a good one to put these things aside. You know, disrupting is positive for customers, but negative for the others. Good. You already made a perfect bridge to the company, because it's tightly related, of course. Techmetric, co-founded that in 2016. You already mentioned COVID as well. I realized from my homework that you actually ran a repair shop yourself for a number of years. I think that's always the best way to understand what's really going wrong and what's missing. What has been the big idea behind the company? Or what was the problem that you suffered from yourself that was screaming for a solution like you're creating today?
So I want you to think back in 2016, iPhone's been out for 8 years or so.
Yep.
And even in 2016, there's no solution that allows me to see what's happening at my repair shop other than me being at the repair shop.
Yeah.
And all of the solutions were on-premise solutions, server workstation type of arrangements, zero cloud offerings in 2016. And I'm like, you know, I'm scratching my head thinking, there are some players in this space that have been here so long. I'm surprised that they haven't thought about building a cloud-based solution. Why are they waiting? What are they waiting on? And so we decided to go down that path of building a cloud-based point-of-sale solution for auto repair shops.
Makes complete sense. And yeah, you have these waves in the industry. And I mean, I've seen a couple over my career. And they invite new thinking, and sometimes you can jump on it and adjust, and other times you don't. You cannot. You have to start from scratch. And sometimes there's also this thing of being just stubborn, thinking that you can make it.
Yeah.
So the problem was indeed the technology legacy. What did that lead to? I mean, the fact that you cannot see how you're doing on your phone doesn't have to be neck-breaking for a company.
Yeah, and so essentially checking efficiency of a repair shop, how they're performing, how many vehicles are in the repair shop. So there's a bunch of gaps that they had. And then this is also a time where there was bolt-on applications for performing digital inspections of vehicles to existing point-of-sale systems. So what I did was essentially, why not just build a cloud-based point-of-sale solution that combines both digital inspections and the point of sale solution? And we essentially want to verticalize it, right? So we wanted to build, we wanted to start at the core of auto repair. Instead of going horizontally, we focus on vertical. And then we integrated payments inside the platform. We have a digital inspection in the platform. And then we're going to continue evolving the product set. And we just acquired a marketing company last year. And we're working to build that functionality out into our product as well for the auto repair shop. So we're going to continue adding those feature sets. And we don't want to just have light bolt-on versions of add-on products. We want to actually have a truly unique customer experience. The customer experience side of it is probably the most important side of it for me. So I want to make sure shop owners are able to have the best experience possible with the products we develop.
Love that. I mean, primarily also because I wrote this book, The Remarkable Effect, and that customer experience is where, if that is unique and people love it, that's where people start talking about you, and you cannot market against that.
Yeah.
So you already highlighted, okay, we did a couple of things in this particular order. What has been an early decision? Because technology was already pretty mature back in 2016. It was early on AI, because I mean, when I left Unit 4, we released our first AI products. Of course, there were plenty of options to go and start building. What has been an early decision that has been very important for where you stand today?
I wouldn't say it's a product decision specifically. I would say it's the way we operate as a company. So focusing on customers at the forefront of everything we do. Everything in every department has to affect the customer in a positive way, and that includes feature development and product.
I like how you say that. That includes feature development because so many companies think it is feature development and the other things are possibly, bonus. But you're right. So can you give an example about how the whole company is centered around that experience of a customer?
So let me take it a step back, Don. So you have like these, I need to come up with a better word than this, but essentially the energy that each department in a SaaS company has. So let's look at, so typical SaaS layout is you have a product and engineering department, which I combine together. Then you have a sales department, you have a marketing department, you have a support department, and then you have all of the other G&A functions, legal, FNA and whatnot, people and culture and whatnot. The energy that each of these departments has to stay in this order, as I said. Because if product and engineering isn't the most important department in a SaaS company, that means that the sales is going to swap places with it, and then you're going to be overselling a product that potentially has a bunch of gaps. Or if sales is not number two and it replaces it with marketing, that means you're spending too much money in marketing to get the leads for the sales team because it's not really a great product market fit. So there's a lot of negative effects that happen whenever these departments change positions in amongst themselves. And so maintaining that hierarchy is super important for me as I continue scaling and growing the company, because it's also allowed us to grow really fast. Now, one of the other things that's super important is talent. Talent is wrapped around that entire thing. People ultimately are going to be what makes and breaks any company, whether it's lack of decision making, wrong decisions, not being able to pivot quickly, and on and on and on. And what I find in most SaaS companies is that people are just not willing to make the hard decisions around people. And ultimately, the company goes on and on and on. And ultimately, the leader of the company starts pointing fingers and blaming everybody else instead of looking at themselves.
Well said. Well, yeah, I agree. So how do you avoid that? Have you got a principle for that?
I do. As the company has continued to grow, our leadership team has changed with people coming in and out. But it is something I talk deeply about with our leadership team. I set very clear expectations when we hire executive talent, what the expectations are, having very clear communications. And then we spend a lot of time on the interview process with executive leaders, because what we don't, I mean, at this stage in the game, it's very risky hiring a wrong hire can actually set you back several months, 2 years. And so we'd rather just spend time hiring the right person. I'll give you an example. Lauren Langston, she just joined us as president and COO of the company. We spent a tremendous amount of time with Lauren. I just did a 100-day check-in and couldn't have asked for a better partner in the company to continue scaling and growing the company. And in fact, what I think she's going to do is actually not just keep us on our trajectory, which has actually been phenomenal. She's going to elevate that trajectory.
It depends, of course, very much where you are on the journey, your scale up. Everything is, there's repetition, there's product market fit. Having a person like you just mentioned earlier on in the company would likely be overkill. So of course that is an important fact as well. Let's kind of go back to the early decision. You said focus, you said customer centricity, customer experience, everything around that. One of the things that first of all impressed me when I was reading into like what Tegmetric does is this relentless focus on repair shops, independently owned repair shops. If I look, for example, at what you do from a functional perspective, from an outsider perspective, a lot of people would likely say, hey, but I'm not a repair shop, but I could use it. So why have you chosen to go that vertical? And over the last 9 years, well, nine, yeah, 9 years, never sort of expanded from that.
So we did slightly expand on that actually, but let me focus on why we went on this specific vertical. It's all about strategy on how you want to continue growing this company. right? So I wanted to ensure that we focus on the biggest TAM in our space in auto repair, let's just call it, or mechanical repair. And so we focused on general mechanical auto repair. And then once we've picked general mechanical auto repair, we wanted to double down on building the best suite of features for general mechanical auto repair. And so what we did was we used first principles thinking. And what I mean by that is everybody in our space at least wants to either copy features from one another. This person has this feature because their sales team said, let me just give you some examples. Like, let's just say a competitor sales team is trying to sell against us. And the competitor sales team is going to bring up to their leadership that, hey, they've got these features. We can't win against Tekmetric because they have all these features. And what the competitor is typically going to do is try to emulate or copy what we've built, right? I don't approach development that way. I want to first figure out what are we trying to solve? And so if you look at the core functionality of what a point of sale system is supposed to do, it's supposed to be able to write repair orders, right? So a repair order is a one-to-one relation between a customer vehicle and the shop. And then a repair order could have one or more jobs. And let's just call like the tire replacement job or the oil change job. So you could have one or more jobs. So I wanted to put a heavy focus on if we're supposed to be the point of sale system for auto repair, I want to be able to build jobs as fast as possible. And 3 or 4 years ago, I told the team, you know, I've done some assessment, and most of our competitors, even including us, are between 60 to 80 clicks to build one job. And I was like, that's just a lot of clicks to just build one job. And so I'm like, I challenged everybody. I want to do it in one click. And, you know, I got some early designs, and there were like multiple modals. And I'm like, why are you trying to make it so complex? And so if I want to add an oil change, for instance, if I type in oil change, I want to add an oil change job and everything should happen automatically. Now, on a technical level, it's super complex. Every vehicle is different. Every vehicle has different parts. The labor times are different. But what we essentially did was we broke down the core functionality into unit bite-sized pieces, which essentially drove the outcome that we wanted. And so one of the core things that we had to do was build our own labor guide inside of our system. We didn't want to rely on anybody else. And then we started building out what we call the smart jobs feature. And in one click, you technically can add an oil change inside of a repair order. And it'll automatically search your inventory, make sure you have the correct filter in stock, you're selecting the correct brand. If you don't have it, it'll automatically fetch it from outside. It'll pick the vendors that you use, it'll bring it over, it'll apply taxes, fees, discounts, and all in one click. And so that's how we approach software development. I don't care to copy.
Let me make a small interruption here. Sunil just made an excellent remark that sets his solution apart from conventional software development. While his team kept proposing complex solutions with multiple steps, Sunil demanded radical simplicity, reducing what competitors needed 6 to 8 clicks for to just one. His insights? Don't add more features, eliminate everything unnecessary. It's the exact opposite of how most software evolves, constantly adding bloat instead of solving the core problem elegantly. It's what remarkable software companies master. They acknowledge they cannot please everyone. They pick their battles wisely. Secondly, they focus on the essence, so they strip away everything that doesn't solve the core problem. And lastly, they master the art of curiosity, so they see opportunities that others miss entirely. Want to master these traits as well? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy. An inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview. You're so right on it. Super that you gave that example, because so many people get that wrong. Like you say, they see, okay, you have this feature, or you have this functionality around it, and we have to copy it as well. But they haven't got a clue. It's not about the features. In all the work that I do, repositioning software companies, the strategic, getting them right again, that is always such a big component that people think that it's a feature game that they're building, that they're selling, that they're marketing. But I mean, I've been competing with the product that I was responsible for against SAP and Oracle and Microsoft, companies that are 10, 20, 30, 50 times the size of the company that you're working in. So how on earth are you going to compete against that power? But it's not about that. It's about the approach that you take to solve a problem. And this is exactly an example of how you do that. And nobody can copy your approach, because that is actually, that's within the four walls.
Yes.
It is, yeah, first principle thinking. It's architectural design. It's DNA of the product. Once you got that, you got something that's deeply differentiated. Fascinating. Glad you told me. You also said that you sort of moved, you drifted a little bit from your initial focus. So is it just independent, or is it also the broader, the bigger ones?
So we do independent repair shops, but we also have chains of independent repair shops. And what I mean by that, like for instance, Christian Brothers Automotive, they're 200 and I think 80 locations across the US. So they also use our product. Or Meineke is around 800 locations. They also use our product, but they're still independent repair shops.
Yeah. But you also said that certain chains, certain franchise companies, you don't do. What is the reason for that?
Well, so this is a conversation that can pivot now to SMB versus mid-market versus enterprise. And that's a dilemma that a lot of software companies have.
Yeah.
And, you know, early on, we got some enterprise customers on our platform. But, you know, if you had to probably ask me to do it over, I probably would have focused on SMB. We're fortunate with the partners that we have today. We have a great relationship. But what usually happens when you start dealing with enterprise customers is, you know, they have this wish list. And typically what enterprise customers do is they pass a spreadsheet around to all the different departments in their organization. What features do you want in a point of sale system? And this sheet is like 300 different items. And we might cover most of them, but we don't cover a lot of them. And ultimately, they're basically like, well, if you don't develop these features, our team needs them. And that's just the wrong approach at how you operate. And so we prefer to back away from enterprise customers that are wanting to go down that path. Because if you can't answer to me why you need something, you can't simply just come to me and say, oh, well, they need it, or this department needs it. And if you're not willing to change processes that you have adopted over 10 years for the sake of, like, they just want me to develop the feature, that's where we have to, like, draw the line. We're not going to do that.
The reason why I deliberately kind of push you in this direction, because this is such a, this is such an area whereby so many companies just shift and bend. Mm-hmm. And to your point of, okay, if R&D isn't in the lead, and then sales, and, you know, and if they're not in the right role, well, things will ultimately derail. And I think this is also what sales typically see. Okay, hey, they see an opportunity, they do car repairs, and then they come back like with this big deal. There's just this list of contractual obligations that you have to build, and they become one-offs. And it completely brings everything to a halt. So I applaud for the focus and for the for drawing those lines and being super critical on that in every part of the process, for R&D, for marketing, for sales, for implementation, and so on. So I love that that example. 2016, you start building, you get to market. What has been the hardest nut to crack to get to the momentum phase?
The growth?
Yeah.
I think the hardest part for us to... So I spoke a lot about that hierarchy of the different departments and how each department has to stay in order. A lot of companies will get funded with tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars by venture capital, and they'll try to pour money into growth. And I don't believe it works well that way. You know, because you could have a large bank account, and you could you can pour money into leads to try and get leads. But what do you do with all those leads when everyone's churning out on the back end? And it takes some thoughtful approach. It takes some methodical, thoughtful approach on how you continue to grow and scale the company. And I don't believe in just dumping money into an area that's not going to solve anything. We have seen way too many companies fail. Of all of the SaaS providers in our space, we have raised the least amount of money with only one round. And we are the only profitable point of sale system in our space. And we are also the largest now today.
So what do you believe is the secret?
Oh, we don't have enough time on the podcast to go over that.
If you would mention one that has been particularly useful, well, let me just phrase it this way. What has been an unexpected way or Yeah, now a counterintuitive lesson that you've learned scaling the business. Something that you thought was going to go this way, you decided the other way around, and it really worked out for you.
Let's look at marketing, for instance. We had a marketing leader that spent a lot of money at Techmetric year over year, and we cut all marketing to zero. This was a couple of years ago, and including demand generation. And we wanted to spend time looking at the data, thinking through what's going on, and then essentially invest in areas that actually are providing leads for us. Now, we got a stronger marketing leader now. She manages all of our marketing, Claire, and she's done a phenomenal job on demand generation, which is a muscle that practically was non-existent at Techmetric before Claire joined us. And so we've done a great job in scaling that. But remember, the hierarchy of those departments I go back to, we have to maintain, like, it can't just be a blanket check to marketing, spend whatever you want, get me as many leads as you want. You have to think through, does our organization even support lead flow? Where are the bottlenecks? How are you going to maintain churn? So the way I look at my role and Lauren's role at the company is basically the orchestration of the people at the departments at Techmetric. And you're constantly trying to balance everything in the company and continue to grow.
That's what it is. Talking about, you already mentioned your relentless focus. Chapter one in my book, The Remarkable Effect, is that remarkable software companies acknowledge they cannot please everybody. That's where it all starts. It's the rail for development, for marketing, for sales, for everybody in the company. Second thing at the end is then they offer something valuable. A lot of people do, but also desirable. And this is, I think, also where if you focus not deep enough, then you still are in generic things.
Yeah,
and you want to kind of focus and double down on the things that work. And other things won't work, but so be it. This works for us. And you're talking about you can have hundreds of leads. If the majority of the sales-led software companies that are out there have a very good year when they have 30, 50, 100, maybe 200 good customers, rather than 10,000 weak ones, because that's also the churn thing. And where winning the majority of the people that you start engaging with is what it's all about, because these become your fans. These become the flywheel. So how do you keep, in talking about sales, if sales is under pressure to deliver their numbers, how do you keep them honest about where to focus and what to qualify out on?
Be very clear with our communications and transparent with everyone in the company.
Yeah.
And so I have Andrea Waller. She's our SVP of revenue. She manages all of the sales functions at Techmetric today. She's done a phenomenal job in our growth trajectory at the company. We've seen significant growth with her very short stint at Techmetric. And one of the key things that she and I always talk about these things, but ultimately she has to ensure that her sales teams are following the very principles that have made us successful as a company. Being very transparent with customers, telling customers when things don't work, we tell them, this is something we just don't do. And the number of customers that have actually come back to us in the future is phenomenal to see. I remember a customer out of Southern Colorado, Scott Elmore, and it's a very large shop. I told Scott, I was demoing Scott back in the day. And I said, Scott, we're not a good fit for you. I don't recommend you use our product. Yeah. And a couple months later, he appreciated the honesty and he actually signed up and he said, look, I recognize you guys are not there today, but I'm okay with that. The current solution I have right now is just not working for me and I'm willing to ride it out with you guys.
Exactly. It builds so much trust just to be honest and say no. Yes, we could function, we could technically help you, but you will never become a fan. That's how I try to approach it. And then it sort of, it turns around and companies start to then say, hey, wait a minute, but I need it. And they start selling to you.
Yeah.
Enterprise software is about long-term relationships.
It is.
And that's the foundation of it.
Yeah.
Fascinating. So in that 9-year journey, what has been the biggest challenge to get towards predictability?
I think, it's been several years now. Mm. I would say that our ability to be predictable is fairly consistent year over year over the last several years. You know, our budgeting process, how much we spend, how much we forecast. And in fact, if anything, our forecasting probably is softer than what we actually do as far as performance goes. We actually exceed our forecasted budget substantially every year, year over year. And when you combine EBITDA growth plus growth of the company and customer base, we're in the top decile of SaaS companies as far as performance goes. And so, but it's been a muscle that we've had to build. Revenue operations is a department we had to build. And you know, you have all these people complaining in the company, what is RevOps? Why do we have to have it? We've been doing great without it. And I just don't agree. I just see a future where you have to be extremely data-driven in decision-making. And without that data, you're not going to be smart about the decisions you're going to be making in the company.
So what are the blind spots that these people that say that have?
Well, I think it's just younger leaders, maybe leaders that came from smaller software companies that didn't have exposure to departments such as this, or it's a muscle that they just don't have, right? A lot of leaders, young leaders, especially in smaller SaaS companies, it's all about gut feel. And convincing people to use data to make decisions over your gut feel is not an easy thing to do. But
True.
the strongest leaders in our company, in fact, all of our leadership team is all very data-driven around decision-making. And ultimately, you can't really BS them. They're going to prove to you with the numbers. Now, numbers, so I have a leadership principle: numbers don't lie. Men lie, women lie, but numbers don't lie. Now, you know, numbers can have some bias to them depending on how you get the numbers, right? So how you spin the numbers. So most of our leaders know how to dig through that to figure out what's the truth.
Yeah, everybody wants to look good, and you pick your measures, your KPIs and your metrics behind it to show, hey, I did my job. But ultimately, also, and that's where aligning the whole company up to what's that same goal. If you do that right, one number that I particularly have come to love over the last couple of years is ARR per employee. That number says so much about your leverage, the waste. It has everything in there. Particularly if you understand like what the business is really all about and growing that. So many companies think that, yeah, it's impressive to say we've doubled the number of employees of our company last year, and I'm always sorry for them. So it's like I say, it's the numbers don't lie, and there's truth in there, and it's about building a software company. It's about building leverage, profitable leverage. Good point. Let me see, looking at the time. I mean, over the last 9 years, how has your definition of success changed? Or what is maybe a metric that you thought was important, but that you at some point dropped happily?
How has the definition of success changed? I don't know if it's really changed, Don. I think there's just so much more we're going to be able to do in this space. We're just focused on mechanical auto repair, and we just recently released a tire functionality in Tekmetric. But that's just the point of sale system. There's a lot more to explore with auto repair, generally speaking. Whether it's data, whether it's parts, there's just so much more that can be done in this space. And we're going to always keep the customer at the core of everything we do. So how do we provide and continue to improve the solutions that an auto repair shop continues to use? And how do we be that company that they rely on for everything they do in the repair shop?
I got a challenge for you here because we started on how you started, and you saw all the incumbents that hadn't caught up, that were just relying on their old stuff, their old on-premise systems. How do you manage on a day-to-day basis avoiding becoming that incumbent?
So I would say we're an insurgent today, and I want to maintain insurgency in the marketplace. So how do we do that? You have to be deeply connected with customers. You have to have regular conversations with them. And what usually happens is these larger companies, they get very big. EBITDA becomes a goal of theirs over anything else, profitability. And for us, it's not EBITDA or profitability today. It is just making customers happy. Although we are a profitable company, it's not the core driver for me to continue growing this company.
It's the consequence.
And I don't want to lose sight of that. And ultimately, like, I'm fortunate enough that I can continue focus on growing the company. I think success, I always look at success, revenue, money, and all of that will always follow as a side effect of focusing on doing what's best for the customer.
Well said. Yeah, that's the magic. And that allows you to get so much value back for what you deliver your customers that you always have this extra body of budget or fat to be able to work on what's next
Yep.
rather than getting caught up in a corner.
Yeah.
Good. Last question then. Over your career, your entrepreneurial journey, what would be a do and what would be a don't that you'd like to share with other tech entrepreneurs that aspire something similar that you have achieved?
I think a do is focus on talent in your company. I think people are probably the most important ingredient for the growth of a SaaS company or any company for that matter.
That's true.
And that includes like having these tough conversations, being very transparent, authentic. There's a lot of things in that bucket. On the don't just blow money left and right. If you are a founder that's never built a software company before, most, I would say, have a tough time growing a SaaS company because it's just too difficult for somebody who's never managed an organization, as it continues to get bigger and bigger, with that many people, that many reports, looking at data, being data-driven. There's a lot that a CEO has to do as a founder. And if you're not ready for it, don't just blindly go in thinking you're going to be able to do it. You have to be very intentional and self-aware of it.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing the wisdom. Thanks for sharing the inspirational insights and a couple of your big lessons learned. Where can people go to find out more about Tekmetric if they are a car repair shop or to say hi to you?
They go to techmetric.com, TEKMETRIC.com. There's a ton of information on that website, along with videos and whatnot. And then I'm usually at most of these trade shows, especially the larger ones. And I always like meeting customers.
Good. People have to check you out on the trade shows then, which is exactly also where your people should be. United States, Canada, I heard. Good. Thank you very much. Good luck on the next 9 years of the journey. I look forward to doing another podcast on in about 5 years or so.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ton. It was a pleasure.
And this ends my conversation with Sunil, and I hope you enjoyed it. And if so, please leave a review on iTunes. And if it inspired you, please share it with other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that you have in your network. Other than that, thank you for tuning into this podcast. I had the honor to speak to Sunil Patel, founder and CEO of Tekmetric. As said, the goal that I have in this podcast is twofold. Firstly, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. And secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what is required to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. Before I close, I have two more comments to make. If you know other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that have a story worth sharing, please send me an email at ton.dobby@valueinspiration.com. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas. And that starts with you. And if you want to know more about my book, or you're interested in joining the Remarkable Effect tribe, please visit my website at www.valueinspiration.com. Thanks for tuning in. And you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast on iTunes or provide me with your feedback directly. I'll see you shortly on a new episode.